At CSUN 2011, this is Michael Off, and we're here at the NFPA. It's better than the YMCA. It's a National Fire
Protection Association.
I'll spit it out here. Was it NFPA.org?
Yes.
A lot of pamphlets here, a lot of documentation. So kind of explain what your organization does and what you're showing here at CSUN.
I'd be happy to, Michael. NFPA is the oldest and largest codes and standards developer in the world. We're a nonprofit organization. We've been in existence for 115 years. And our main business, our primary business, is writing 310 codes and standards, consensus codes and standards for the built environment. Life safety code, fire alarm code, national electric code, and a whole slew of others. About 10 years ago, our CEO, Jim Shannon, recognized that fire and life safety information is more important to people with disabilities than it is to any other part of the population. And he directed us to be more aggressive and more proactive in everything that we do for accessibility. So we've been involved now in a lot of committees. I sit on ANSI A117, which is the National Standard for Accessibility in Buildings and Facilities. I do a lot of work with FEMA, with Craig Fugue, with Marcy Roth. We do a lot of work with the U.S. Access Board, Marsha Mez and Dave Capozzi. In July of last year, we did one of our issues of our trade magazine, which comes out every 2 months, did a full issue on six people with disabilities and how our codes and standards relate to making their environment a little bit better. In 2007, I wrote an emergency evacuation planning guide for people with disabilities at the request of the U.S. Access Board. We decided not to publish that and sell it, but rather we put it on the web for free. It has downloaded over 50,000 copies since then. In June of 2008, we started a quarterly digital newsletter called eAccess for fire and life safety information for people with disabilities. That first issue went out to 367 people, and I was tickled that many people would want to read about fire and life safety for people with disabilities. The 13th issue of that e-newsletter went out 2 weeks ago to 47,000 people. It's growing at a rate of faster than 1,000 a month. So I think we figured out that there is a huge niche. Jim Shannon, our CEO, was right. We need to do more, so that's why we're here at CSUN. This is the first year we've exhibited. I have been here for the past 4 years. I've done presentations on the evacuation guide, and we put money in the budget this year to be at CSUN so that we could meet people like yourself, like your listeners, to talk to folks because they don't know NFPA, and conversely, NFPA as an organization doesn't know the disability community. And what better way to meet and to talk and to cooperate but to come to CSUN?
So you're talking actual evacuations.
That's correct. But also the built environment. Our codes and standards require compliance with and, in fact, mimic the ADA standards. So those are built right into our building code to assure that we have as much accessibility as we possibly can in the built environment.
So where does that go beyond fire? When you say evacuation, I think of things like earthquakes or some kind of natural disaster that requires that people need to leave their given area.
Exactly. I'm impressed that you think that quickly and that clearly. The evacuation guide was written not only for fire, but for all other events, for wind, for earthquakes, for floods, for terrorist attacks, for chemical spills. And it is not a code because it applies to all buildings, whether they're existing or not existing. It's intended to work for a person with a disability so they can get out of any building that they're in. The key to it is to know what building you're going to be in, to pre-plan your event, whether it be your home, your office, someplace you frequent on a regular basis, and plan your way out, plan your backup way out. The evacuation guide has no answers in it. It rather has a checklist with a lot of questions that the person with a disability needs to sit down with their building manager or their supervisor, co-workers, and walk through this plan and answer the questions. Do they understand where the exits are? Do they understand the various evacuation signals? Go through it and then practice it to see if it will work. And if it doesn't, you tweak it and find a different alternative. A care facility in Connecticut that called and said, well, we have a problem. We have some very, very large individuals that we take care of. Say large, we're talking 400 pounds up. They have huge beds. They can't get the bed out of the door. They've got some of these folks on a second floor. What do we do? I mean, we're simply going to drag them on a sheet and try and get them through the door, and that doesn't seem right. So, well, how large a facility are you? And they were pretty big. They had six or seven buildings. I said, by any chance, do you have a forklift on the property? They said, well, yeah, but what are we going to do with a forklift? I said, well, if you take the window on that outside wall and replace it with a sliding glass door, in the event of an emergency, you bring the forklift over, punch it through that glass door, pick up the bed with the gentleman in it, and bring it down and set him on the ground and go from there. At least they're outside the building. That's not a code. It's not a standard. What it is a practical application looking at a problem with a building and a possible alternative to solving the evacuation issue.
Some of our listeners also are almost deafblind, so I'm curious about devices that either vibrate, that can take a smoke alarm and put in some other form of communication and let them know that maybe they need to evacuate.
As you know, there's a lot of technology coming on the market. It's very young at this point in time. One of the problems with codes and standards is that you can only set requirements if the technology exists to comply with those requirements. Like to say, well, okay, every airplane has to go to the moon, that's a little nuts. So technology always goes in advance of the codes and standards. Once the technology has been out there, the next step is to write a standard for that piece of technology. How reliable is it? Those kinds of product standards. When an organization like UL or ASTM writes the product standard that we can measure this by, we can then put it in the code, whether it's the life safety code or the building code, and require that it be in buildings.
I know President Obama has, I guess, launched some kind of initiative to use cell phones for the EAS, the Emergency Alert System. Are you familiar with anything like that?
I've heard of it. I haven't had a deep study of it at this point.
But it does seem like a good idea. When you agree,
absolutely.
As people are listening to less radio and watching less local TV and using the internet, but have some technology that communicates with you with a tool that you have at your side, that would make sense. But
what really thrills me about that technology, Michael, sorry to cut you off, is that everyone can use that smartphone to receive information, whether they have a disability or not. They can also choose to sign into it at the time they wish to use it. So it takes away, it helps resolve a privacy issue.
Exactly.
Which is very important. But also, if we make the environment work for people with disabilities, it will work for everyone.
Exactly. I think that's the exact approach, the best way to look at it. I know in a real emergency, disabled persons in some cases could be some of the last people to be considered or factored into it. So all good stuff. I would encourage folks to go learn more at nfpa.org. Thank you very much, Alan.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. At CSUN 2011, for Serotalk, this is Michael Loft.